Hi, my name is Kelly, and I love alcoholics. Hi, it is true, I love alcoholics, and I am old enough now to know that I'm probably always going to love them. The really sick thing about that is that I learned some horrible tools for how to deal with them. I don't know about you, but I learned that you could yell and scream at them. Any yellers and screamers? Yes! I loved yelling and screaming while I was yelling and screaming. But when I was done, it felt just awful. I learned that you could beg and plead with them. Yes. Any beggars and pleaders? I love you. It never worked for me, but I did that too. I learned that you could write them letters and texts and emails filled with frothy emotional appeals. And that never worked for me either. But I do have a confession to make. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is not conference-approved literature in Al-Anon, but I read it. I read it because my husband is an alcoholic, and I thought I should read his owner's manual. And it says in the big book, quote, only quote I'll give you all night, quote, frothy emotional appeals seldom work. So see, Al-Anons, we know seldom means sometimes. But it has never worked for me. I learned that you could disown them. You could X them out of your life forever. And last night, Anu and today, Anna talked about detachment with love. I call this detachment by amputation. I probably threw my husband out easily once or twice a month for years. And I would have excellent resolve that this is the last time, and for about a day. And then he would come crawling back and he would bat those big, beautiful bloodshot eyes at me. And off we would go again. So imagine my surprise. Just imagine. When I found Al-Anon. And there's this whole other bag of tricks. And they really work. I call them the four S's. You sit in a meeting. You get a sponsor. You work the steps. And you be of service. And I know about a quarter of you are new here tonight. And if you're new, you're sitting there thinking, mm-mm. That should not work. And I agree with you. But there's over 300 people here this weekend, precisely because it does work. And we can't explain to you why or how. We just know that it does. And we are willing to give up our weekends to be around the miracle. And actually, that's my life in a nutshell, so if you had some place you needed to be tonight, then that's it. If you are going to stay, I'm going to tell you how crazy I am and how I got that way. But before I do that, I have got to say thank you to the committee for getting Jeff and I here to Texas. It was 30 below in Montana a week or two ago. We got 7 inches of snow on Wednesday. I got to tell you, we've been thinking about you for a long time. And I have to say thank you to Kat. Kat called us years ago and invited us to be here, and it has been on our calendar for a long time. And Natanya and Robbie have just been just beautiful. And Kay and John, thank you for being wonderful people and helping us get here. And Kay is right. I never used to do this. I am a shy person. I stay at home. I just stay home. That's what I do. And I don't remember the year that I was here, but somebody sent my CD to Kay, and this woman named Caroline called me, and she said, I want to talk to you about ATAC. And I knew about ATAC. I'm not coming here to hang out with Al-Anon women, thank you. So this woman named Caroline calls me and says, I want to talk to you about ATAC. And I said, oh, thank you. You know, I just can't afford a plane ticket this year, but, you know, it's always fun to hang out with you, but I'm not going to be able to make it. And she goes, oh, I'm actually asking you to come and speak. I was like, oh, no, I really can't make it now. And you know, my sponsor says say yes, and ever since then, I can't tell you the places we have been, because you have launched my career, my Al-Anon career. So anyway, our life has been just a miracle, and it has so much to do with you, so thank you. Enough about you, let's talk about me. I come from a really long line of untreated alcoholics. My dad's dad was, by every estimation, an alcoholic. He was a North Dakota wheat farmer, and he was a drinker of the first order. He lived in this tiny little town, and I gotta tell you, no parties happened in that town without my grandpa. He owned the fiddle, and he owned most of the liquor. He's our family hero. We talk about him to this day. He's your family hero too. You just don't know it yet. During Prohibition, my grandpa ran liquor down from Canada into the United States to make sure your ancestors had what they needed. So he died when my dad was just a little boy. So I never met him. I never met this larger-than-life drunk. My grandmother outlived him by 50 years. She never remarried. And when I was born, she moved in with us. And she and I shared a bedroom and a bed until I was 18 years old. Thank you for feeling my pain. Yeah, those were hard years. And she would talk about him, and she would complain about him like he was alive. Like these horrible things he did just happened yesterday. And you know, we know some really sick people in Al-Anon, but I have never met someone who can keep a resentment hot and fresh like it happened yesterday, 50 years after the guy is dead. So my grandmother desperately needed Al-Anon, but she never found it. And I heard a Texas Al-Anon speaker called people who desperately need Al-Anon and they never get it, alligators. Ellen C., thank you. And I consider my grandmother the queen of all alligators, keeping a resentment hot and fresh for 50 years. So you need to know that, because you need to know that I learned from the best. So my mom and dad, between them, they have 14 brothers and sisters, and all of them are heavy drinkers, or they're married to heavy drinkers, and some of them are dead from heavy drinking. My mom and dad, they found each other fast, they got married fast, they made babies fast, and if there was a manual for untreated alcoholics and untreated Al-Anons, That's exactly what it would say to do. Find each other fast, get married fast, and make babies fast. Not always in that order. But that's what they did. They made me and my four brothers. And all of us are heavy drinkers, or we're married to heavy drinkers, and some of us are on the fast track to dying from heavy drinking. I was raised poor. I don't know if I really was poor. My dad always had a job. But what I know about alcoholism is that money runs through your fingers just like water. So I was raised poor. My brothers and I were dumpster divers. If we wanted to eat, we would have to go find food from garbage cans. Not restaurant garbage cans. We were dumpster divers in grocery store bins. It's hard to tell you that, but I have no bad memories about that. I can't tell you how proud I feel that I was able to help feed my little brothers. My dad was also very much into politics, and he would drag us off to these political barbecues and picnic fundraiser things. And I remember being bored at one of these events, and I sat down at the registration desk where they had a big old glass pickle jar where everyone was throwing in money to show how much we like this candidate. And I remember looking at that pickle jar, and I was kind of spinning it around, counting up the money, and as I turned the jar around, there in the jar was a check from my dad for $500. $500 1970s. And I remember thinking, my God, we're eating out of garbage cans, and you're giving somebody $500. And I know that check did not bounce. It was really important for my dad to look good for his drinking buddies. But I remember that day, it just felt like acid pouring over my soul. I don't live with that same feeling of acid on my soul anymore, and let me tell you why. I don't know how many Alcoholics Anonymous members are here today. Please raise your hand. I just want to say thank you. Thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous members who are here tonight for every time you held an open AA meeting. Because your open AA meetings give people like me a chance to sit and listen to people like you share about how you really meant to bring the money home and how you really meant to feed your family. But alcoholism was just too strong. I needed to hear it every time you shared it. And that's what started giving me some healing around that relationship with my dad. So thank you so much for that. Sitting in those meetings, one of you started talking about making amends to a father who had already died. And my dad died before I ever got to my ninth step. And one of those guys in that AA meeting said, well, what he did was he found somebody who reminded him of his father, and that he was just of service to that person. And I remember hearing that, and I remember thinking, well, geez, where am I ever gonna find a mean, sexist, racist, 80-year-old Korean war vet? They're overstocked on those in AA. My sponsor said, don't go anywhere near the AA boys. She sent me out to the VA. And if you want to prove to God you are willing to go to any lengths, go ahead and try to volunteer at the VA. So I fill out the paperwork to volunteer out there. My job once on Thursdays is I call out to the VA and I say, is there anyone in my religious denomination out there? Because I will come and visit them. And they always said no for like almost 2 years of Thursdays. They said no. So it was like the easiest amend ever. And then one day they said, well, we have to. I'm like, ugh, throwing off my Thursday. So I hop in the car and I head out to the VA. I go to the fourth floor and you check in with the nurses, and I told them I needed to go visit these two fellas. And they said, oh, visit anybody else but these two guys. That one is meaner than a hornet. And this one probably only has hours to live. So pick anyone else. And I said, I can't. I'm supposed to see these two, and so by God, I'm not going to call my sponsor and tell her I didn't do it. So I went over to this guy and I walked in, and he was raging at his TV and he was raging at his nurse and he was meaner than a hornet, and he was an 80-year-old Korean War vet. And I walked in and I said, my name is Kelly. Would you like someone to pray with you? And he started to cry. He started to cry because I think he was just scared. And he was confused. And he was lost. And sometimes when you're confused and scared and lost, it comes out sideways. And it looks like rage. And that could have been my dad's thing. I don't know. He could have just been scared. So I prayed with that one guy, and then I went over to the next guy, and I walked into this hospital room. And, you know, this guy only weighed like 80 pounds. He was so tiny, and they had him, his arms strapped to the hospital bed because he was a danger to himself. He kept trying to leave or get out of that bed. So he was this weak man just struggling against those restraints. And he was talking to himself, and he was mumbling and thrashing, and I just said, my name is Kelly. Would you like someone to pray with you? And he acted like he couldn't hear me. The nurses told me that would happen. And I wanted to just leave. It was so horrible and uncomfortable. And I don't know, Al-Anon, you just popped into my head, and you just reminded me. It's just, in Al-Anon, we reach out to the newcomer, and we say a prayer. And so I just reached out to him, and I just put my arm on his shoulder. And I just started saying the Lord's Prayer. I couldn't think of anything else to do. And I just started saying the Lord's Prayer, and he stopped thrashing around. He laid his head down, and it looked like a little baby going to sleep. And I said that prayer slower than I've ever said it in my life. You gave me a chance to channel you and maybe give somebody a moment of peace. And I have to tell you, I never reached out to my dad. I never asked him if he would like somebody to pray with him. So thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, for giving me so much healing around a relationship that was hopeless. I'm really hopeless. That's where I come from. When I turned 18, it made no sense to me that everybody else got to have their own alcoholic and I did not have one yet. So off I went to the local college where, again, they are overstocked. And I found him quite quickly. You all call him Jeff M., and if you were here today, you got a chance to hear him share his side of the story. The Al-Anon women back home call him Java Jeff, and I'm hoping we can talk about that today. I just called him handsome. Oh my gosh, I mean, he's handsome now, but back then he had long, blonde, curly hair, and these really tight, sexy legs. He still has those legs. He cut the hair, but he still has those legs, and if the weather's really nice tomorrow, I'll make sure he's wearing shorts. So I found him quite quickly. We found each other fast. We got married fast. He didn't want to make babies. He wanted to go to grad school. So he applied to all these schools, and everyone accepted him because he's one of those egghead alcoholics. And he picked one, and off we went. The school he picked, he did not know this back then, but what we know now is the school he picked is always in the top two or three drinking schools in the nation. His picker is not broken. And by chance, if it's not the top school, drinking school in the nation, it's usually tipped off of that spot by a Texas school. So off we went to this college. I can't think of anyone who was sober. I should tell you that the drinking days were awful, but really they were just fabulous. And then they were fabulous with fights. And then they were just fights. And it did not help that we made babies in there. My husband's a go big or go home alcoholic, so he can't do anything normal. We can't just have one baby. We get pregnant with twins. And you know, our family was thousands of miles away, so we had no help. So those babies forced us to work together in ways we never had to before. And that's when the wheels really came off our wagon. And that's when things were so awful, and it was just lots of fights, and you don't want anyone to know, but I didn't know what to do, so I asked a friend. I told her things were bad in our home. And she said, "Well, that's easy. All you have to do is be a better wife." I know. I know them fighting words now. But I didn't know back then. So I thought, well, I'll tidy up the house. I'll tidy up the babies. I'll tidy myself up. I lost 30 or 40 pounds, which is totally sexy if you think famine is sexy. And then I thought, I will track our budget. I'll track every dollar going in and every dollar going out, and then we won't have to fight about money. I know. Here's what I know about alcoholics now, is that they are addicts, and they will get what they need, however they need to get it. They will sneak behind you, they will go around you, or they will plow right through you. And so things got worse for us. They did not get better. Thank you, God, he did graduate. And thank you, God, he got a job. And we packed our babies up, and we hauled those little babies across the country to this little flea-bitten town of Helena, Montana. I hated everything about Helena, Montana. We still live there. And and I love everything about Helena, Montana, and I know why we are there. We are there because Jeff and I were about ready to lob hand grenades into our relationship until there was nothing left but dust. And if we were going to make it, we were going to need to be someplace where recovery is just on fire. And that's Helena, Montana. And if you are ever in Helena, Montana, you should look us up. People have done this. People, like, I don't even remember from a conference, will call and say, "Hey, we're coming on through." Like, Uncle Zanya. My home group meets Monday nights at 7. We are the Good Grief Al-Anon group. And I just want to put a plug in for the raffle. Those raffle women are working overtime, but just so you know, these quilts over here, this middle one with shoes, that was made in Helena, Montana by my home group. And this shoe here that's blue closest to me, that's the shoe I made. Who knew in 2001 I'd still be here doing this? I know I did not know this. I would never have said yes to this. And that I would get a chance to see that quilt again. That little shoe has a little ankle bracelet on, and if you get close, you can see that it's got beads that says, "Good Grief, Alan," on. Yeah. So I don't know if that increased the value of the quilt or decreased the value of the quilt. So anyway, please, if you come to Helena, look us up. Anyway, I did not know any of that about Helena, Montana when we first got there. What I did know is my job was to stay home with the babies all day, think about how horrible our life is and how it is all his fault, so that when he came home, I could tell him. And he would come home from his very stressful days, and all he really wanted were the three B's. He wanted to see his babies. He wanted to watch basketball. He wanted to drink beer. And instead, he got the fourth B waiting for him by the front door. We would feed those babies and put them to bed, and as soon as they were in bed, we would have knockdown, drag-out fights. And one of our babies, they were really little when we lived there, but one of them remembers having a nightmare of a train crashing through our home. And it could have just been a nightmare, or it could have been her parents. You know, if there was a manual for untreated alcoholics and untreated Al-Anons, it would say, pretend the kids don't know. And when they notice, lie to them. We do horrible, horrible things to our children like that. Our children are brilliant. And I don't know what the solution to that is, other than if you know an Alateen or an Alateen sponsor, you know a hero. So thank you, Texas. I know you have healthy Alateen here. So Jeff and I were not always able to keep the fights after bedtime. I remember having a horrible fight Sunday afternoon. The girls were probably 6, maybe 7, I don't know. And I sent them down the hall to their bedroom so they didn't have to hear. People 2 blocks away could hear. So we have this horrible fight. Jeff stomps out and he leaves. And so I go down the hall to check on our kids. And you want to know what those little monsters had done? They had taken their color crayons, and they had colored circles of red circles and green leaves, and they had taped maybe 8 or 10 of those pictures up and down our hallway. And I remember thinking, you little monsters are ruining the paint by putting tape on it like that. So I burst into their bedroom and I said, what the heck? Only I was way meaner than that. And these 4 little eyeballs looked up at me and they said, those are pictures of mistletoe, Mama. Because mistletoe means love and kisses. So these little kids are trying to figure out the mystery of alcoholism. And they're doing a much better job than their parents, by the way, because all we could do was fight. And they've got some logic behind their idea. And if you ever actually do some research on mistletoe, you will find it was used in ancient times for warring factions. You hang a mistletoe so that the warring factions would know that this is where you come, and you lay down your weapons, and you come and negotiate peace. And there's our babies doing that. I know they didn't know any of that, but better than what we had going. So after one of these horrible fights, Jeff came home, and I remember saying to him, things are bad in our house. We need marriage counseling, we need help. And he said, yes, you're crazy, you should go. Just so you know, it doesn't work that way. But I did go to marriage counseling by myself for almost 2 years. And she invited him one time. And he showed up, and she said, "Kelly is leaving you. I just thought you should know." Yeah. You know, you could have tipped him over with a feather. He was so surprised. And I'm looking at him like, how could he possibly be surprised? I've been throwing him out for years. I found him apartments. Yeah. But none of that was a sign to him that things were bad in our house. So he turns to the marriage counselor and he says, "Oh my gosh, we need marriage counseling." And she sends us off to find somebody who will work with both of us. And oh my gosh, if you have not tried marriage counseling, you have to try it. It is a hoot. You walk into this little room, and then the marriage counselor says, "So, Kelly, how are things going?" And I would just vomit all of the things he was doing wrong, and all the ways he did it wrong, and all the times he did it wrong. And I loved marriage counseling. And we would leave those sessions, and I would just say, "That went well." And Jeff and the marriage counselor looked like they'd been stuck in a wind tunnel of, you know, their hair. We did that for 3 or 4 weeks, and walked in one day, and the marriage counselor said, "You know what, Kelly, you do not need to be here." And I said, "I know. You need to spend all your time on Mr. Bad Behavior over here." And I already know all of this stuff. And he said, no, you do not need to come back. Because your rage, your bitterness, your meanness, and your ire is just poisoning this process. So please, oh please do not come back. I stand before you the only person I know who flunked out of marriage counseling. So I did leave. No, oh, but I should tell you, looking back, that's probably when I won the crown from my grandma. She could keep a resentment hot and fresh for 50 years, but I flunked out of marriage counseling. So I did leave. I never went back. I have no idea what my husband did. I do know that 8 or 10 months later, my husband came home. I remember we were in the kitchen, and he came in, and he said, "You know what? I think I'm an alcoholic." And I turned on him and I said, "Oh yeah, I can think of another A word." Because I knew he wasn't an alcoholic. I knew it. He didn't drink like my family. He didn't drink like my brothers. He still had a job. He still had a home. He still had a loving wife at home. So I knew he wasn't an alcoholic. But he insisted on hanging out with those A&A boys. And I don't know what happens in A&A. But I do know that they gave him a new design for living. And he became happy, joyous, and free. And I did not. I had the same old design for living, which was pick at him in the morning, he picks at me in the afternoon, by dinner time we have a fight, he sleeps in his office downtown, and I get the big bed alone, but victorious. That's all I knew. That's what I thought marriage was. It was a game of tug of war every day. You play it, somebody wins, somebody loses. And I don't know what he learned in those AA meetings, but somewhere along the line, somebody told him, you don't always have to participate in every fight. You don't always have to pick up your side of the rope. And you know how frustrating it is to play tug of war by yourself? You pull, you fall down, then you're madder. And if you really want to make a mad person madder, put them around a pink cloud happy person sometime. So he got better and better, and I got worse and worse. And after living that way for a year, he came home one day and he said, I deserve to be happy. And he moved out on me. The good one. And that was not the script. The script was, I throw him out, he comes crawling back, makes amends, and then I throw him out again. He was flipping it all upside down. So when he moved out, I thought, well, I know he's not an alcoholic, but I can at least do some research and go get the brochure. Somewhere in that first year, he had mentioned this thing called Al-Anon. That was a bad day for him. But I remembered that Al-Anon thing, so I thought, well, I'll go back in the day to get a brochure. You had to go to a meeting. So I went to the meeting. I got there a minute early. I went to the Good Grief meeting. I got there a minute early, and they said, you're just in time for a meeting. And I said, I don't need a meeting. I need the brochure. They said, have a seat. We'll go get you the brochure. So I sat down. I never saw a brochure ever, even to this day. I haven't seen a brochure. So I sat down, and they started, God help me, an Al-Anon meeting. And God bless you, Al-Anon. I knew instantly I did not want what you had. It looked to me like God had just plopped me down right in the middle of the sisterhood of comfortable clothing. You all were wearing sweatpants and flip-flops, and you were saying things like, my husband's in jail. And you're still doing it. And I knew you were not taking this seriously. And it was deadly serious to me. My husband had moved out. So I knew I did not want what you had. I hardly heard a word you were saying, but the last woman to share, her name was Helen, and she said, why don't you try 6 meetings? And I thought she was a genius. And I know that 6 meeting thing is a cliche now, but Al-Anon, your cliches saved my life. So when you feel like you shouldn't say it, you say it. So I thought she was a genius. Where I live, you can do 6 meetings in a week. So off I went the very next day to my very second meeting of Al-Anon, because I'm going to get my research done just in a week. I walked in, and a guy I had never seen before, or I thought I had never seen him before, he came up to me and he said, welcome, Kelly. And my world fell apart. I didn't know that he was just welcoming the newcomer, and he had been at my meeting the night before. So no wonder I thought all those women looked a little dowdy. They weren't all women. So he was just welcoming the newcomer, and he remembered my name, but I didn't remember him, and I was just horrified. I thought, oh my God. If there was a manual for untreated alcoholics and untreated Al-Anons, it would say never ever let anyone know the nightmare in your home. And now this total stranger knows my name and that I need Al-Anon. So I was terrified. I thought there was this thing like Al-Anon FBI. He was going to tell somebody, and my husband's boss would find out, and Jeff would lose his job, and we'd lose the house, and we'd be raising the kids on the street. And that's how crazy I am. And I hung everything, everything on that part where you guys say something about being anonymous, because I was terrified. So thank you, Al-Anon, for keeping the anonymous piece to our program. So I sat down in that meeting, and I remember just crying. I could just feel my face was red, and it's like, I really effed this up. And I sat there for about 10 or 15 minutes, and it dawned on me that, yes, I had effed it up. But once the truth is out, you never have to live in the lie again, ever. Amen. And I remember my shoulders just relaxing. I remember being able to take a really deep breath. And that's why I kept coming back. I didn't come back because I liked you. I thought you were weird. You couldn't say God. You had to say higher power. There's no dues or fees, you're making that up. There's no leaders, everybody has a leader. You guys are just weird. But I knew if I sat with you, I would be able to breathe for 1 hour. And what a precious gift. There's somebody back home that as soon as he gets into our Al-Anon meeting, he falls asleep. And it makes some people crazy. But it's a sign to all of us that we have created a really safe place for all of us, that he can sleep this 1 hour with us. So I started hanging out with you, and I started doing those four S's. I sat in the meeting, I got a sponsor, I worked the steps, I did some service, and weird things started happening. I called them coincidences. For example, my husband moved back, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could figure out how to have a weekend camping trip so we could start building some positive memories for our kids? And like, how do you get a tent and some sleeping bags and some hot dogs, and you know, all that costs money. And if there was a manual for untreated alcoholics and untreated Al-Anons, it would say, fine, have a bank account, but you better not have any money in there. So I didn't know how we would make this happen, but I started praying that, well, maybe we could figure this out. And about that same time, a little town called me and asked if I would come and do about 2 weeks worth of work for them. And I've been in Al-Anon long enough to know you don't leave your family for 2 weeks. So I called them back and said no. And they said, well, why don't you bring your family? We'll cover housing and food, and you just cover airplane tickets. We still had that bank account that didn't have much in it, but we thought we'd sit down and look up plane tickets. And I probably should tell you that that little town was in the Virgin Islands. I know. So we sat down, and we could not afford these tickets. They cost like that much money. But before I could call them back, another little town about an hour away called, and they said, we would like you to come and do some work for us. We can't pay very much, but we could pay about that much money. It was exactly the same amount as those plane tickets. We had to spot God about $8. And he has been good for it. So this little beat up, broken down, alcoholic family spent 2 weeks in a 5-star resort in the Virgin Islands. Who has this happened to them? In Alcoholics Anonymous, they say something like, are these extravagant promises? They always say that. We think not. These are absolutely extravagant promises. Absolutely. And yet they happen so often. It's just like part of our life. We just, yeah, sure. Virgin Islands, yeah, sure. They happen sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But they seem to always materialize as long as you're working the program. And that's what was happening in our life. I still called them coincidences, but they just kept happening, especially if you listen to the Al-Anons. So I always thought the hours of 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. were reserved for fighting with your husband. Yeah, you go to an Al-Anon meeting, and they will tell you that's not what it's for. You're supposed to make your home a nice, quiet, loving place so your kids can have dinner and do their homework and get ready for school the next day. Sounds boring. And it was. And we started doing that for days and weeks, which turned into months and years, and our kids got really good at that school thing. And one day they came home and they said, you know, they were seniors, and they said, you know, we're thinking we want to go to college. And I'm thinking, nobody sends twins to college. Nobody sends twins to college. It is impossible to have enough money to send twins to college. But they said they want to go to college. I started thinking, apply wherever. But maybe if you lived in the basement, we all got part-time jobs, and you went part-time, we could figure this out. It'd be a 10-year plan. And that spring of their senior year, they came to us and they said, Mom, we would like to go to these colleges. And they showed us pictures of what I can only describe as castles. These big, beautiful stone, brick, amazing things that were hundreds and thousands of miles away, and they were hundreds and thousands of dollars. We could double or triple mortgage our home. We would not be able to afford a year at these colleges. So I just said, well, that's nice, dears. They would have to accept you first. And they both said, but Mom, they did. And then I said, well, that's nice, dear, but they would have to give you both the mother of all scholarships. And they said, but Mom, they did. So then I excused myself to go call my sponsor, because there's no way I'm sending my babies that far away. During the drinking, the awful, awful drinking days, they were all I had. It was just three of us. And I could not imagine a life without them. So I called my sponsor and said, I can't do this. My heart will break into 1,000 pieces. And she said, I know, so here's what we're gonna do. You're gonna go help them pack their suitcases so they can go to college. And you're gonna come to your home group every single week. And we're gonna just duct tape your broken heart back together. And that's what they did. 4 years, my home group took care of my broken heart. And then one day, one of those babies called and she said, I'm in love. Our beautiful daughter Maggie married the most wonderful woman, Katie, and we love her dearly. They have, they are the model for what a good relationship should be. And the other baby called and she said, you know, Mom, I want to be a doctor. I'm like, I don't know anything about that. Take doctor classes. To be a doctor, you have to take a class called organic chemistry. It's way worse than it sounds. Way worse. So she signs up for organic chemistry, and she gets this old teacher who has no textbook. Nobody's passing the class. Everybody's flunking. She's calling home every couple days crying because you don't get to be a doctor if you don't get an A in organic chemistry. And I don't know how to help, so I'm sitting there at home trying to figure out how I'm going to learn organic chemistry in like 3 weeks so I can help. And as God would have it, God put me on an airplane and he sent me off to a conference very much like this. As a matter of fact, almost exactly like this. And my hostess picked me up at the airport and she starts talking about how wonderful the conference is going to be and who's going to speak, and she's just rattling on about it, and she's driving me to the conference and I'm not listening. My heart is just breaking for my daughter. And so when she finally stopped talking, I just said, I'm so sorry, I'm not present, I'm not listening, this is what's going on with my kiddo, and there's nothing I can do, and I just don't know how to help. And this is going to sound like a cruel joke, but she says, organic chemistry? Well, I have a PhD in that. But wait. She says, and so does my husband. But wait, she says, my husband teaches that exact same organic chemistry course at our local college. And when I met him, I'd never met him before, one thing you need to know about these two is that they are upstanding and outstanding members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. And I had never met him before. He had asked for my daughter's email, which I thought was weird. But by midnight that night, he had signed our daughter up for his organic chemistry class. So she got all of his taped lectures, all of his sample quizzes, all of his online examples. And our daughter got an A in organic chemistry. And just in November, she learned she passed the boards. She is a doctor. And then I had to stop calling them coincidences. I just told you a story of cascading miracles, just miracle after miracle. And really, they have nothing to do with me. They have everything to do with you. All I ever did was say the pain that's in my heart. And then you stepped up every time you could, how often you could. And you made those miracles happen. And that's the world I live in now. I live in this world of, it's like God has this big old dump truck of miracles, and he has just backed that thing up to my house, and he is just dumping miracles. And what I know now is he probably has always been trying to deliver the dump truck, and I've been the mean old lady sitting on the front porch saying, get that thing off my lawn. And I don't know what you did to me in Al-Anon. I don't know if you kept me too busy to see the dump truck coming, or you just rubbed my edges off, or you taught me that my higher power only lives 12 steps away. But that dump truck is still coming. It's coming fast and furious. For Pete's sake, there was a time when nobody wanted to hear my story. I couldn't pay anyone to hear my story, not even a marriage counselor. And now, I don't know, 300 of my closest Texas friends are paying top dollar. I want to share with you what I think the biggest miracle that happened for us has been in recovery. I told you my husband moved back. But what I didn't tell you is that it really wasn't much of a marriage. It was like a kind and cordial roommate. And you know what? I loved that. It felt so good to have kindness in our home. And I thought, you know, I could live this way for a long time. And we did. And then one day I had to pick our kids up at 3 from school, and I got done with work at 2. So I went to a coffee shop. And I walked in at 2, and there was my husband in line to buy coffee. And I remember thinking, this is weird. Do you shake hands? Do you side hug? You know, I didn't know. So we got our coffee, we sat down, and we talked to each other for 20 minutes. And we were so proud of ourselves. In marriage counseling, we had been required to talk to each other for 5 minutes every night, and we couldn't do it. So here, you know, 20 minutes. So we were so proud of ourselves. We started meeting for coffee a couple times a week, and then coffee got expensive, so we started meeting at home for coffee. And then one day I walked in to have coffee with my husband at 2 in the afternoon, and he didn't. Sharp crowd, sharp crowd. It was a coffee, tea, or me moment. And he was picking me. And I only wanted kindness. I don't know how to do all of that other stuff anymore. I wrote it all off. I have no idea how to do any of that. And thank you, Al-Anon. For making, you know, if there's something that's confusing or difficult or hard. Okay, we'll try that again. Okay, so if there's something really complicated or difficult or hard. There's answers to deal with that kind of stuff. The first thing that came to my mind was, get to a meeting. Can you imagine? There's my husband being a boy, having boy thoughts, doing boy things, and I say, hold that thought. Just gonna go to my Al-Anon meeting. Be right back. Give me 1 hour. So I didn't do that. The other Al-Anon thing that came to mind for me was, call your sponsor. No, I'm not calling my Al-Anon sponsor. Are you kidding me? Have you people ever met an Al-Anon sponsor? They are these kind, sweet, loving, gentle women. If you ever said the word sex to them, their heads might pop off. Or worse, they might give you one of those horrible Al-Anon sayings like, well, dear, when you get busy, you get better. Oh, there's worse ones. I don't know if you ever got this one, but how about this? Well, dear, just be where your hands are. calling my Al-Anon sponsor. I'm doing the other thing you taught me to do when things are difficult or complicated or even hard. And that is invite God in. So there's my husband being a boy, doing boy things, having boy thoughts, and I am praying. Dear God, this was never supposed to happen for us, but if you want this to happen, then God, you better show up. And then he did. And then we did. And now we still do. And God still shows up too. Yeah. I know you're sitting there thinking, oh my God, did she just stand at the podium and talk about having a three-way with God? You know, when you say it like that, it sounds really bad. The very first time I ever shared this from the podium and they recorded it, thank you, Greg, for recording everything. Did I melt the machine? Okay. The very first time I ever shared this and they recorded it, somebody took that CD down to my pastor. That was an awkward Sunday. But when we finally had a chance to talk, we sat down and he said, you know, I agree. Is there really any place you would not want your higher power to be? Amen. Is there something so sacred or so profane about a bedroom that you wouldn't want your higher power to be there too? He did say he would pick different words. So what I've learned after being in Al-Anon for like 24 years now is that there is nothing so sexy as recovery. When you put on an event like this, or you open a meeting or make the coffee, that's really attractive. That is sexy. And when my husband works with a newcomer or takes a meeting into the jails, that's hot. I'd tap that. My husband comes home smelling like really bad AA coffee. That's an aphrodisiac for me. So I thought what we had was love. I thought God had shown us all he needs to show us. I thought we were as close as we could be. And then this morning, Jeff shared with all of you that I came down with a little case of breast cancer. Yeah. And if you think that sex stuff is love, you wait until your husband is watching you puke your lungs out. And he stays there with you. And he takes care of your surgical sites. He drives you to your appointments. So I'm not totally through the cancer stuff yet. I have an appointment in March, so I'll take your prayers middle of March. But what I know about cancer is it's a bastard. It's just always going to be there. I don't care if it kills me. I do care if it keeps me from living life to the fullest. And you're the ones who taught me how to do that. There's a reading in Al-Anon that says, I am not afraid of this storm because you taught me how to sail my ship. So, you know, part of me wants to say, you know, whatever, cancer, bring it. I'm not wasting one more day thinking about you. But it taught me something new about love and new about relationships. And I don't want to end my talk there because I always think cancer is a big fat Debbie Downer. Sorry if your name's Debbie. I didn't mean that. I don't know when I got up here. I'm sorry, Greg, I forgot to time myself. I want to end with what you told me when I got to my first Al-Anon meetings. You told me, do not leave 5 minutes before your miracle. And I want to share, I want to add to that, do not leave 5 minutes before your dump truck of miracles. Because if there's a dump truck for me, and there is nothing special about me, I am just one of God's kids. There has to be a dump truck for you. So don't leave before your dump truck. I would like to add, do not settle, and I mean this for every cell in my body, do not settle for your wildest dreams. They are lame. If I had settled for my wildest dreams, we would have had a weekend camp trip. Instead, we got to go to the Virgin Islands. If I had settled for my wildest dreams, our kids would still be living in the basement going to school part-time. If I had settled for my wildest dreams, I would have had a husband who was a kind and cordial roommate. And instead, I get Java Jeff. My boy toy. Thank you for inviting me to share.